passion, drive, and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights, and more. Whether you're into speed, power, or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
If your day sounds like...
we need the report ASAP.
You deserve Modelo. If you've persevered through... you deserve this rich golden lager with a crisp but refreshing taste. Or if you overcame...
two more.
You deserve this ice-cold reward. Modelo, the markable fighter. Drink responsibly. Beer imported by Crown Imports, Chicago, Illinois.
Welcome in to another Baseball America Top 10 Prospects podcast. I'm Kyle Glazer. We are here to break down the New York Mets farm system today. And to do that, we are joined by our executive editor and longtime Mets Top 30 author, Matt Eddy. Matt, thank you so much for joining me today.
Hi, Kyle. My pleasure.
Matt, the Mets entered last year with enormous expectations. They had the most expensive roster in Major League Baseball history, the highest opening day payroll in Major League Baseball history. And by the All-Star break, things had fallen apart. They tore down at the All-Star break, trading Max Scherzer, trading Justin Verlander, trading a few other players as well, David Robertson, etc. And they finished last year 75-87. On the heels of that, there's been a lot of change. The Mets hired David Stearns to be their new president of baseball operations. Manager Buck Showalter was forced to resign. General manager Billy Epler resigned shortly thereafter. And there have been a couple of other changes as well. Chris Gross was recently brought in from the Astros to be the Mets' new VP of scouting. There's a lot of change going on in the Mets organization right now on the heels of last year's season. When you kind of look at what it all means, both for the short term and the long term, how do you assess all the change in the Mets' front office?
Yeah, I think the Mets' plans for 2024 began at the 2023 deadline with the trades of Scherzer and Verlander and importing some of their top prospects who are closer to the major league level. And then hiring David Stearns as president of baseball ops kind of kicks it off for real, the 2024 build. The Mets have lacked discipline in their decision making. I think Stearns will help solidify that as they build toward a more sustainable core, which they haven't really had in many, many years.
Yeah, there's no question that they've spent a lot of money in recent years since Steve Cohen took ownership of the team. They did win 101 games 2 years ago, so it's not like it has gone completely haywire from the start, but there's no question there's a lot of money paid to a lot of players right now who aren't producing to the level hoped for or expected. They've handed out some big contracts that ultimately did not work out or help lead the team to where they wanted to go. I do think if you're looking for positives, we did see a couple of Mets top prospects make their way up the system and establish themselves in the majors to some degree. Francisco Alvarez showed some good things, also showed some things he needs to work on, but he got up there, hit 25 home runs as a rookie catcher. You can build off of that. We saw Brett Beatty come up. He started off hot, really fell off, but again, he's got that first taste of the majors now. We'll see if he's able to build off that. Mark Vientos got to the majors too. And most importantly, Kodai Senga, who they brought over from Japan, was not just one of the best rookie pitchers in baseball last year, was one of the best pitchers, period. They signed him to a 5-year deal. He's got 4 more years left. He's the kind of guy you can lean on at the front of a rotation for the next couple years. So there are certainly some pieces and players to work with. At the same time, you know, we did see Pete Alonso, while he still hit 46 home runs, kind of took a step back in terms of his overall hitting ability. Francisco Lindor continues to do some good things, but the contract he signed for, he has not lived up to that. Starling Marte took a step back as he entered his mid-30s. Brandon Nimmo is still solid, had a really good year, but there are a lot of players in this roster who have underperformed, and you look at the overall pitching depth, it certainly is lacking. How far away are the Mets from truly contending, especially after they kind of decided to take a step back and maybe build a little more with an eye on the future here last year?
I think, you know, given the contracts they've committed to players like Lindor, Nimmo, Edwin Diaz, you have to play somewhat short term. So I would think that if this prospect group who's going to debut in 2024 pans out, I think 2025 is realistic to be more than just like a, you know, a wild card one and done type of team.
Yeah, that's an interesting point. You mentioned this farm system, this group of prospects. If they debut and things go well, we could see 2025. And I want to dive into that system a little bit because this is an important group for the franchises, not just long-term future, but short-term future, especially given some of the sell trades they made to enhance their farm system. Matt, as you were putting the system together, you had a couple of really interesting options at number one. Jet Williams, their first round pick in 2022, got up to AA in his first full season. Impressive debut all around. You have guys like Ronnie Mauricio, who have been around for a while and made his major league debut last year, and also some key guys who were acquired in last year's trades, Drew Gilbert and Ryan Clifford, who came over in the Justin Verlander deal, Luis Angel Acuna, who came over in the Max Scherzer deal. Ultimately, Jet Williams settled in as the number one prospect in the organization. How much of a gap was there between him and some of these other players? Was it clear-cut number one based on your reporting? Kind of take us through the process and how much of a number one prospect was Jet Williams compared maybe to the rest of the field?
Yeah, I struggled with the question, but to the Mets personnel I spoke with, it was clear that Williams was their top prospect. This was kind of similar to the lost 2020 season when there was also kind of a flux at the top of the prospect hierarchy. And the feedback at that time was Francisco Alvarez is the guy who's the clear number one. So it reminded me of that situation where you had a lot of guys of seemingly similar talent, but the organization preferring Williams. You know, Mauricio did reach the major leagues. He does some things well, you know, hits for power and has shown some defensive versatility. The hitting and on base ability is very much an open question. But, you know, batting sixth or seventh, if as he did a lot as a rookie, it won't matter to that degree, to the same degree.
Yeah, in terms of Jet Williams' long-term potential, what level of player does he project to be? Are we talking about a solid everyday guy? Is there a sense he could be an all-star? What's the long-term potential here for Jet Williams if everything clicks?
Above average regular, possible all-star, but at this point, probably not like a perennial type of all-star kind of guy.
Yeah, what really stood out was his patience and his plate discipline. As he ascended three levels, the overall like pure hitting ability at times was inconsistent. It wasn't great early on, but he was a rookie in his first full season playing in the Florida State League, got up to Brooklyn and hit really, really well, finished the year with a short stint at Binghamton. How much of his hitting ability is his on-base skills versus pure contact?
Yeah, I think you know, swing decisions are obviously excellent, but he just rarely swings and misses. So if he gets, you know, if he's swinging at the right pitches and making the hard contact, I think he's a pretty safe bet to hit high average, high on base, top of the order type of batting profile.
Yeah, and he's a really good athlete. He saw most of his time at shortstop last year. He also saw a good chunk of games in center field. The shortstop play does need to clean up a little bit, 23 errors in 92 games there. Long-term, where does he fit positionally, especially given you have Francisco Lindor at short and Brendan Nimmo in center field, kind of his two positions locked up for the long-term?
I think there's a sense that center field might be his best position, you know, with Nimmo sliding to left. Like, as you say, he did split his time between short and center in high school and didn't come into pro ball as like an especially polished defender. And I think that's still apparent. I think the sense is that he could get to average if he continues to work at it. But I think center field to take advantage of plus speed, and he throws pretty well. I think that's the best course. Second base, they seem confident he can pick it up if needed. But the Mets also have a lot of options there as well.
Yeah, absolutely. Again, really good full season debut for Jet Williams. I'll be curious to see how quickly he moves to the majors. Again, it was his age 19 season last year, already got up to AA. He's a high school guy, generally those guys don't move quickly, but we're seeing teams move guys more aggressively. And as you mentioned, we'll see if he makes a 2024 debut and gets his feet wet. But I want to circle back to the players the Mets acquired in the headline deals for Justin Verlander and Max Scherzer at the trade deadline. Obviously, how those players pan out will go a long way toward determining how quickly they're able to get back to contention. Drew Gilbert was a first-round pick. Luis Angel Acuña, a top 10 prospect in the Rangers system and a top 100 prospect overall. And Ryan Clifford was someone who was really, really rising quickly in the Astros system. What were the early reviews on these three, Gilbert, Acuña, and Clifford, as they joined the Mets system last year?
Drew Gilbert had the best initial run with the Mets, playing for the Double-A team, helping Binghamton reach the Eastern League Finals. So he had the best run, and he ended up ranking third behind Williams and Mauricio. I think it's more comfortable with his floor being as like an average 50s, maybe a few 55s across the board type of major league player. Great makeup, hard worker, all those attributes. And Acuña did not play particularly well coming over from the Texas League, but he was on that Binghamton team as well. I think with him, he's got carrying speed and carrying defense, probably at second base. But in terms of, the plate approach probably puts him more as a bottom of the order type of player, potential regular at second. And Clifford had the roughest transition coming from Asheville, a super friendly left-handed power park, to Brooklyn, probably the worst left-handed power park, certainly at high A, and struggled as a result. Strikeout rate spiked. He said he had trouble seeing the ball a little bit from picking the ball up from the outfield signage at Brooklyn. That was an issue, a mitigating factor there. But if it clicks, profile power for a corner, good field to hit.
Yeah, I want to circle back to Acuña because I think that was the trade that was a surprise, that it was a one-for-one deal for Max Scherzer. If you had told me that they traded Max Scherzer, they got Luis Angel Acuña and a couple of other players, I would have said, okay, I can see that. The fact that it was a one-for-one deal certainly raised my eyebrows, and I did kind of get a little bit of a chuckle how after the deal, you kind of saw a lot of Mets beat writers saying, oh, he gets compared to Ozzie Albies. That was clearly something being fed from Mets officials, because that is not who he comps to. He's just not that level of player. I get what they're saying, that he's a shorter, twitchier athlete. And you can kind of say, okay, he's a little guy with a big swing, which Albies has as well, but it's a very different caliber of hitter. And that little guy with a big swing really jumped out in the fall league. When I saw him, it's like a lot of the evaluators have talked about that. Like you said, it probably is more of a bottom of the order type. I've always kind of seen him more as a potential utility type than an everyday starter. What's the overall assessment of what he can be? You mentioned the Mets have a lot of second base options. That's probably his best position, although he can stand it short if needed. What overall is the expectation, a realistic expectation for Luis Angel Acuña? Because a perennial all-star who gets MVP votes like Ozzie Albies is not something anyone has really ever seen.
No, I've never heard that, and I agree. That's not where I would go with the comp. I think starting second baseman, eight, nine hitter is probably, like, especially in the short term, is the best case example. But he does have carrying speed, which is an element the Mets are not particularly strong in on the major league team. Potential utility, just depending on how second base, third base shake out, because you have Beatty, you have Mauricio as options at those positions. Careers, career outcomes to be determined. Scherzer had, watching his starts with the Mets, he had given up his slider had become hittable. He was not the same pitcher as he was in the past. So to me, with the money attached to him, the trade value was way down.
Yeah, again, I think it's just about having reasonable expectations for Luis Angel Acuña. Again, I think some people are going to see one-for-one trade for Max Scherzer and expect the world, and I think it's important to modify those expectations and say, okay, an eight-hitter who still has a lot of bases, provides some occasional power, can play both middle infield spots. There's value there, and that can be a good player, but I think expecting him to be Ozzie Albies is not fair to him, nor matches up with anything any evaluator has really seen throughout his career, aside from, again, a few moments after the trade when it was clear someone was trying to, pump him up a little bit. Matt, one of the things that jumped out is the top five players in this top 10 are all position players. We've talked a lot about the Mets and their pitching and how there's been a lack of organizational pitch and depth, which is part of what hurt them last year when Scherzer and Verlander were hurt early. They just didn't have many options they could call up and get reliable, consistent innings from. I want to dive into the pitchers with you a little more after the break, but when you look at these position players, it seems like it's indicative overall that the Mets, this is still the strength of the scouting and player development group. Seven of the top 10 are position players. The top five are all position players. Is it fair to say that this is a very position player heavy prospect group overall when you look at the best players in this organization?
It is. And, you know, a lot of their trades centered on position players as well this year. I think they've attempted to build pitching depth through the draft these past three draft classes. And this next season in 2025 will be telling on how much progress they've made on that front.
Absolutely. All right, Matt. Well, I want to dive into some of the pitchers in the system. We're going to take a quick break, and then we'll look at the rest of the Mets' top 10.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't a search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. That's why I use Indeed for our hiring at Baseball America. It allows me to do everything on one website. I get quality candidates. I can schedule them. I can interview them. I can screen them. I can send messages to them all within Indeed. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree that Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Baseball America. Just go to Indeed.com/Baseball America right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/Baseball America. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
After the end of a good fight, you deserve an ice cold reward. Medella, the mark of a fighter. You've earned this rich golden lager with a crisp, refreshing taste. Because you know, the bigger the fight, the better the reward. You put in the hours, the energy, the tough labor. You are a fighter, and Medella is your reward. Medella, the mark of a fighter. Drink responsibly. Beer imported by Crown Imports, Chicago, Illinois.
This is the story of the one. As head of maintenance at a concert hall, he knows the show must always go on. That's why he works behind the scenes, ensuring every light is working, the HVAC is humming, and his facility shines. With Grainger's supplies and solutions for every challenge he faces, plus 24/7 customer support, his venue never misses a beat. Call quickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Welcome back to the Mets Top 10 Prospects Podcast. I'm Kyle Glazer alongside Matt Eddy. All right, Matt, before the break, we discussed the top half of this top 10, all of whom are position players, a couple of top draft picks, guys acquired in trades, a big international signing, and Ronnie Mauricio, sort of guys who came from all avenues. When you look at this second half, we talked about this is a very position player heavy prospect group, but you do start to see some of the pitchers, and the top ranked pitcher in this organization is Christian Scott. He was a fifth round pick out of Florida in 2021, was mostly a reliever in college. And then the Mets turned him into a starter, slowly got his workload up. And then he really, really blossomed last year, finished the year at AA and great strikeout to walk ratio. It really, really stood out how he did not walk many batters at all while missing a lot of bats. Take us through Christian Scott's development and ultimately what makes him the best pitching prospect in this system.
Well, to answer your second part of your question, a lot of it's just lack of alternatives. I think, you know, with Scott's development, I'm not trying to sell him short. I think, you know, best case, he's a number three profile. You know, if he's capable of showing the durability and endurance that required of that level of starting pitcher. But, he drafted as a reliever, mostly a sinker slider reliever at Florida. The Mets have had him focus on a four-seamer. He's picked up a split changeup grip. He's added a sweeper this offseason. So he takes to things very quickly and throws strikes. So the question will be just seeing if the stuff will play against major league hitters. If it does, they'll have a successful major league starter in Christian Scott.
Yeah, I mean, we talk about the ability to pick things up quickly and adapt to new roles quickly. 107 strikeouts against only 12 walks all of last year. 2.57 ERA, got up to double A, and most of that was at double A. It's not like he did most of his damage against A ball hitters as a collegiate and then got hit hard once he got up to start facing guys who are more age appropriate. He really, really excelled against age appropriate hitters in double A. He is a little bit older, and you mentioned his career high in innings is 87 and two thirds, which is what he accomplished last year. In order to be even a back rotation starter, you really need to get up into that 130, 140 range. And as you mentioned, number three potential, now you're talking 150, 160, 170. What is the level of confidence the Mets have that he will be able to hold this stuff over longer outings and continue to build up and be that kind of steady, reliable mid to back rotation starter who can take the ball every fifth day and give you six quality innings, start in, start out?
It depends who you talk to. I mean, some people would be very bullish on that outcome becoming a reality. I think maybe the most important thing to note with Scott is that he will be the first pitcher called up if he's healthy and effective this year. He'll be the first one to get the spot start that comes up.
Two other pitchers in this top 10, Blade Tidwell and Mike Vassell, two guys whose names are fairly well known in terms of the Mets farm system. Both of them have certainly had some pedigree. What kind of seasons did they have in terms of development, and what is their outlook moving forward now?
Tidwell came into pro ball, pretty electric fastball slider combination. The key for him is, he tends to scatter the zone. So his control is shaky, especially early on last year in 2023, but he got stronger as the season went on, got more confidence in his changeup, which he actually used, I think, I want to say 12% of the time, a pretty high amount, to the point where it's become a legitimate pitch, which has helped him. I think opinion still split starter, reliever. I think there's potential closer potential with Tidwell if he doesn't start, but if he can refine the control slightly, he does have, number four type upside in the rotation.
One guy that I wanted to dive in a little more is Mike Vassell, because he's someone who was a highly touted recruit out of high school, ended up going to college, fell a little bit in the draft, but he had a really, really strong season last year. What's the long-term outlook for him? Because he's someone that with the performance he delivered, there's a sense that, he's someone who could help the Mets in some form or fashion here fairly soon.
Yeah, I agree. And as we saw this year, it's so difficult to evaluate AAA because of the ABS. I think you look at Vassell's walk rate between AA and AAA, and it's night and day. He just had trouble getting the high strikes called. And as a result, AAA hitters were able to kind of shrink the zone on him. But I think he's notable more for having a wide repertoire. He's built up his velocity a little bit in pro ball and ability to hold it. I don't think there's a true knockout pitch. I think a slider is his best pitch. So I think you're looking more 4-5 type of arm, but somebody with a lot of proximity.
Matt, one of the players that there were high expectations for coming into this year was Kevin Pareda, the Mets' first-round pick in 2022. There was always a lot of question about whether or not he'd catch, but there was a lot of confidence about the bat. And he went out this year in his first full season and just frankly did not have a very good offensive season. Hit under 250. The strikeout to walk was very, very concerning. Then he finished the year in the Arizona Fall League and really, really struggled there as well. He was a top 100 prospect for us at Baseball America, fell out pretty handily. The scouting reports were not great. The production was not great. What is Kevin Pareda's status right now here after his first full season?
Well, he's going to have to improve the throwing and the framing and the receiving to stick a catcher, or improve his bat to be viable at a secondary position. First base, some rival scouts want to see him at second base, see what it looks like. But, you know, as you mentioned, one or the other has to improve for him to have a positive major league outlook.
What went wrong as a hitter this year? Because, again, that's something that there was a lot of confidence about. The strikeout to walk was fine in college, hit for average, hit for power. There was a lot of confidence he'd hit, and he just didn't this year. What went wrong?
I know a lot of people don't love the setup. He kind of puts the bat back behind his back before he starts his load. That could be a contributing factor. I think also he did pretty well until he made it to Double A. He also had an ankle injury sometime around that point in the season. And, you know, the parks that the Mets play in are super pitcher friendly in Class A. So I think you have a lot of contributing factors, but I do agree with you that it did not meet expectations of where he was drafted.
Yeah, I think seeing how he bounces back is going to be one of the more interesting subplots of the 2024 season for the Mets in terms of what's going on in their farm system. Because if he can get back to being the hitter he was expected to be, that's a really, really valuable player that you can see helping your big league team. But if he's not able to, then you're looking at a top half of the first round pick that falls short of expectations, which is just not something that helps your long-term outlook. Matt, as you put together this top 10, how many other players were in consideration for these final few spots? How many players would you say overall were in the mix to be in the top 10?
I viewed it as a fairly defined top 10 group. Obviously, you can make some arguments for some of the pitchers they've drafted, Brandon Sproat or Dominic Hamill, players like that at number 10 rather than Parada. I decided to give Parada one more chance to see if he can iron some things out in 2024 before writing him off. Because he had pedigree in high school and in college. It just didn't work this year. And see if he can make some adjustments to make it work.
Yeah, you mentioned Sproat and Hamill. Again, we've talked about the Mets. While this is a very position player heavy organization, they have a lot of pitchers who have some name recognition, were high draft picks, you know, have some pedigree. What did you see from them? And ultimately, maybe what's the step they need to take to get into the top 10, Sproat and Hamill specifically?
Let's see. You know, Hamill's 24 and finished in Double A. He's knocking on the door. He'll probably get a look. I think the concern is not having like a bona fide third pitch. I think he's working on some sweeper and change up variations to kind of get that third pitch, because he's always had that swing and miss fastball from the low angle. And Sproat didn't pitch after he signed, but has, you know, tremendous athletic ability, velocity. Sharpening the breaking ball would be the number one goal for him.
Absolutely. Yeah. And again, there are certainly some players here, particularly on the pitching side, that you can see helping the Mets. But is it fair to say it's mostly going to be in kind of a back of the rotation type of role, that outside of Christian Scott, there's no one who maybe fits a mid rotation or higher potential ceiling?
For the most part, they really like what they saw from third rounder Nolan McLean after the draft. He was a two-way player in college, focusing mostly on pitching. They say let him DH a little bit next year, but they really like the stuff in like a bullpen instructional setting. Question is, can he control the ball and can he hold up? Because he hasn't done those in college yet, but they like the raw ingredients quite a bit.
Yeah, absolutely. Again, there's pieces to work with here. And like you said, I think that as bad as last season went, you can see a scenario where the Mets get some contributions from some young players who got their feet wet in 2024, and maybe they're able to return to contention in 2025. Matt, obviously there's been a lot of focus paid on this organization since Steve Cohen took over, his grand proclamations of, you know, becoming a perennial power who reaches a World Series within a few years. How realistic is it that this team can meet his expectations and the timeline he set out when he became the owner, that they'll be in a World Series anytime soon?
I would say low, as much because of just the way the playoffs seem to work now with this expanded field. It just seems completely randomized with this new playoff format. Maybe it's just an aberration these 2 years, but it's virtually unpredictable.
That's fair. I guess a different way to say it is, how long until they're a World Series caliber team?
Well, best case, 2026, in that range, you know, because you know, and if it doesn't work by then, you have to think about trading off the veterans, you know, because you'll have a core of young players that will have come up, and you'll have an expensive group still there. So,
yeah, it just goes back to, you know, when Steve Cohen bought the team, he said, if I don't win a World Series the next 3 to 5 years, then obviously I would consider that slightly disappointing. I'm not in this to be mediocre. I want something great. So meeting that timeline of winning a World Series in 3 to 5 years, just given the overall talent that the Mets have, when you look at what's the majors, what's in the farm system, what they need, and how long it's going to take, you know, 2026 obviously falls outside that time window. So we'll see what happens. You know, crazier things have certainly happened, and the Mets have the financial resources to take some big swings for sure. But, it will be interesting to see just what they do in terms of the new regime led by David Stearns, whether they take a longer term, more sustainable build, or if they try and go make those additions right away to try and meet that timeline. Matt, any final thoughts here as we wrap up the Matt's Top 10 Prospects podcast?
No, I think you hit on the high notes.
All right. Sounds good. Well, thank you so much for joining us. We appreciate your insight as always.
Thank you, Kyle.
All right, everyone, that'll do it for another Baseball America Top 10 Prospects podcast. Go ahead and give us a review on iTunes, Spotify, Stitcher, whatever platform you're listening on. We'd love to hear from you. For Matt Eddy, I'm Kyle Glazer. Thanks for listening. Have a good one.
If your day sounds like...
We need the report ASAP.
You deserve Modelo. If you've persevered through, you deserve this rich golden lager with a crisp but refreshing taste. Or if you overcame,
two more.
You deserve this ice cold reward. Modelo, the mark of a fighter. Drink responsibly. Beer imported by Crown Imports, Chicago, Illinois.
This is the story of the one. As a maintenance engineer, he hears things differently. To the untrained ear, everything on his shop floor might sound fine, but he can hear gears grinding or a belt slipping. So he steps in to fix the problem at hand before it gets out of hand. And he knows Granger's got the right product he needs to get the job done, which is music to his ears. Call, click Granger.com, or just stop by. Granger, for the ones who get it done.